So let's take out our Bibles at this time and turn to the book of Exodus. We are this morning in Exodus chapter 11, and we are continuing on the story of this book of the Bible, this amazing story. Just before we get to the reading, a few things to bring to your attention. As we've been mentioning the last number of weeks, we have what we call the blessing tree here in the sanctuary, and there are different cards hanging on the tree from World Renew. And the deacons are challenging us as individuals, couples, families, small groups, ministries, to look at the tree and see if there is a card that we could take off the tree and buy a gift for someone in the world. So a challenge for us to look at that tree, look at those cards, and see if we can get all the cards off the tree before Christmas Day. Another thing to remind you of is the sermon notes, again, on the church's website. You're welcome to check those out. And I've already mentioned the activity bags and the children's sermon notes. Hopefully, kids, if you want those or need those are available to you. This morning, we're looking at the plague of the firstborn, or the final plague. I'm going to call this morning, based on last week's message, the final wonder. There are 10 wonders in the book of Exodus, and this morning we're looking at the 10th, the final, the climactic wonder, the killing of the firstborn sons in Egypt. And this morning we're asking the question, why would God do this? Why would God kill children? Is he cruel? Is he malicious? What's going on that this final plague is so horrendous? So I want to invite Simone to come and read from Exodus chapter 11. Simone is Cynthia's sister, and Beatrice's aunt came from Brazil in September. So thank you so much for being willing to read the Bible reading this morning.
Now the Lord had said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here. And when he does, he will drive you out completely. Tell the people that men and women alike are you to ask their neighbors for articles of silver and gold. The Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and Moses himself was highly regarded in Egypt and Pharaoh's officials and by the people. So Moses said, this is what the Lord says. About midnight, I will go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh who sits on the throne to the firstborn son of female slave who is at her handmill, and all the firstborn of the castle as well. There will be loud wailing through Egypt, worse than there has ever been or ever will be again. But among the Israelites, not a dog will bark at any person or animal. Then we will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. All these officials of yours will come to me, bowing down before me and saying, go, you and all the people who follow you. After that, I will live. Then Moses, hot with anger, left Pharaoh. The Lord had said to Moses, Pharaoh will refuse to listen to you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in Egypt. Moses and Aaron performed all these wonders before Pharaoh, but the Lord hindered Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let the Israelites go out of his country. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. So again, I want to ask the question, which is maybe a question that more of us have, or maybe some of us have this morning, but why this awful plague, or why this awful wonder? Why go to this kind of extreme? Why kill these firstborn sons? Is God malicious? Is God cruel? And I begin this morning by just acknowledging the question that I would assume, again, some of us might have as we hear this part of the Bible. It's not, at first glance, an easy question to answer. For people who love life and love others and love children, this is a perplexing part of the Bible, and I want to just sort of let it sit there among us for a few moments. Now, I know that someone might say, who are we to question the ways of God? Right? God does what he does, and who are we as mere human beings to question the ways of God? And I would say that's true. That's very, very true. But we still question, and we still wonder, and we're still puzzled over passages like this. The ways of God are not always obvious to us. So I want to suggest it's okay for us if we're wondering, why would God do this? Why would God go to what seems like this extreme plague or this extreme judgment to let his people go free? I recognize at the same time, although these are questions we're asking, I don't think the author of Exodus was asking these kinds of questions. And I don't think Pharaoh himself was asking these kinds of questions, because certainly for Pharaoh, he is a king and he is a warrior. So he knows the brutality of life. He knows the brutality of going up against a power or a force like this Yahweh God. But we struggle. I think at least some of us, we struggle to understand. And I'm going to encourage us again to allow some of that struggle to happen, because God's ways are not always easy to figure out. And maybe in our struggling, we might increase in some empathy for others who have other questions about other parts of the Bible that are very difficult to figure out. So recently, I've had some people ask me again some really great questions about the Bible. Some of these questions I have heard before, some of them I have not heard before. Like someone asked me recently, why are there no female authors in the Bible books? Like, it seems like all the Bible books are written by men. And I thought, I've never asked that question. Maybe because I'm a man. But that was a great question for me to hear and think, why is that? Why is that part of the Bible? Or people in this morning's passage, other passages, oftentimes are wondering, why is there so much violence in the Bible? Why all these awful stories of people being killed? Or people asking, isn't the Bible anti-woman, anti-women, anti-female? And maybe at first glance, it might seem to be, but I think there's actually amazingly wonderful news, good news for, also good news about women and females in the Bible. And the questions go on. And this morning, I'm just trying to encourage us to allow some of those questions just to sit there for a little while. To say it's okay for some of these questions to arise in our minds. Now, a bit of a response to the question we're asking this morning. We're asking about God's ways, but we have to be fair in the story and also ask about Pharaoh's ways. We're asking, why is God going to this extreme? But on the flip side, we should also be asking, why is Pharaoh's heart so hard? Why is Pharaoh himself so stubborn? If the 10th wonder had been the first wonder, if the 10th wonder had been the first thing God had done, from my perspective, that would have been cruel and malicious. But the killing of the firstborn is not the first wonder, or the second wonder, or the third wonder. It is the final and tenth wonder. So we should also be asking, why is Pharaoh so stubborn? Why didn't he, after the Nile River turned into blood, said, man, I'm against an amazing power here, please go? Or after all the frogs, or after all the flies, or all the boils, or all the hail, or all the darkness, said, whoa, I get the message. I'm going to let your people go, God, before it gets too bad. So we could be asking God, and maybe that a question is still there, but we should also be asking Pharaoh, why are you so stubborn? Why are you holding on so tightly? Why don't you submit to God after two or three or five or eight wonders? Why did it take till the death of the firstborn for you to let the people go? And for me, both of these questions are perplexing. Why is God doing what he's doing? Why is Pharaoh doing what he's doing? And I'm going to suggest that the second question is the more perplexing question. Because the second question about Pharaoh's heart is the question of every human heart. Why is the human heart so hard? Why is my heart or our hearts sometimes so stubborn? Why does it take us sometimes so long to say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that? Why does it take us sometimes so long to realize I'm going the wrong way? This is not the right way for me or for others. It's taken me so long and so much effort to get my heart to go the right way. This morning, I'm thinking about us as human beings in general. I'm also thinking a little bit about our current transit strike. Now, I am no expert in unions and transit systems, but it seems to me, again, could be wrong, but it seems to me we got these two sides, and they're both holding on so tight. And in the end, as awful as it's going to be, someone's hold will have to break, right? That's what it's going to take, it seems like, right now, for this transit strike to end sometime, who knows when. And it seems to me to be the conundrum of the human experience, right? Two people, two groups, we're holding on, and at some point, someone will maybe have to break and give in. And it's a question of why. Why? Now, as I think about what God is doing in the book of Exodus with these 10 wonders and this final wonder, it maybe is quite obvious, but I need to say it out loud. God is so passionate to free his people. So he goes through these 10 wonders and even is willing, this 10th awful wonder, because he is so passionate to free his people. I'm going to suggest God is longing and yearning to free his people from slavery. He will not be deterred. He will not be thwarted. He will do what it seems like, whatever it takes to free his people. He will go through whatever length to bring his people to freedom, which is not good news for Pharaoh and Egypt, right? If God will do whatever it takes, it's not good news for Pharaoh and Egypt, but it's really good news for the people in slavery. When they know and they see that God will do whatever it takes to free them. And I want to suggest this morning, this is the yearning and desire of God right from the beginning of the Bible story. This past week, I was listening to someone talk about those early verses of Genesis. And they were focused on the second verse of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 2, which gives the context for the creation story. And it says in Genesis 1, verse 2, the earth was formless. The earth was empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And the next verse says, we have formlessness, darkness, emptiness. And the next verse is, God said, let there be light. And this person on the podcast was saying, he used the language of God is freeing his creation from darkness, emptiness, and formlessness. And I never thought about that before. But in some sense, the creation was in slavery. What was enslaved by darkness, what was enslaved by emptiness, couldn't get rid of this, and God came speaking into the darkness, let there be light, let there be trees, let there be fish, let there be birds, let there be a creation. And this is, I think, right from the beginning, the heartbeat of God's intention. We see it throughout the Bible, but I want to jump to later on in the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 21, where God is talking about slavery, and he says, if you buy a Hebrew servant or a Hebrew slave, that person will serve you for 6 years. But in the seventh year, he will go free without paying anything. And when I read verses like this and other verses in the Bible, I realize the Bible is not a pro-slavery document. In a culture where people thought it's the king's right to enslave people, it's the oppressor's right to enslave people as long as they want to. In that kind of culture, the Bible puts divinely imposed limits on slavery. 6 years. And then, listen to this, not just let them go, but later on in the book of Deuteronomy, it says, when they leave your service, you have to heap gifts on them, which is just like what? The Egyptians heaping gifts on the Israelites when they left Egypt. So they can serve you for 6 years, but then they go free, and when they leave, you heap gifts on them as they go into their freedom. Now that, for me, is amazing counsel, advice, commandment in a culture that had never heard anything like that. I also want to point out this morning, maybe as difficult as it is for us to hear this, that when God brings the tenth wonder on Pharaoh, what's he doing? He's bringing justice on Pharaoh, right? So the tenth wonder takes us back to the beginning of the book of Exodus, when Pharaoh himself is killing baby boys. If Pharaoh had not killed baby boys, this tenth wonder would not have happened the way it did. So God is bringing upon Pharaoh, or returning into Pharaoh's life, the same thing he has brought upon other people. And there is a principle here. It's talked about in the Bible. I think it is a principle of the universe that you reap what you sow, which is awful news. It's terrible news. It's fatalistic news for any one of us who's ever done something wrong. Anyone here like that has ever done something wrong in the past? And they think, is God going to return on me? If I've sown lies or unfaithfulness or other things, is God going to return that on me? And he will. The Bible says, unless something happens to us, unless there is a change in our lives or a change in our hearts, unless we bring that to God himself and say, I don't want to carry this anymore. And the Bible, amazingly, always leaves hope for that. Unless something happens in our hearts or in our lives, or we move in a different direction, or as the Bible story moves, unless someone else steps into that for us, That is our lot. That is what's going to happen to us. And that's the amazing thing about the Bible story. I know that the questions, if you have questions this morning about Exodus 11 or other stories like that, they just don't go away very easily. Questions about violence or judgment or killing or death, those questions rattle us. Those questions can and do keep people from embracing God, embracing the story of the Bible. And if all I had was the book of Genesis or the book of Exodus or even the Old Testament, I would feel rattled. I would not feel there's good news for us. The Old Testament all by itself has moments of good news, stories of good news, but the Old Testament all by itself is not a good news book, a good news story. So we have to keep reading. And we find out as we keep reading the Bible that the God who brought judgment on Pharaoh in the book of Exodus sends his son to take that judgment. The God who told Pharaoh, because you have done something to my firstborn, that's the people of Israel, I'll do something to your firstborn. This God sends his one and only son into the world as a baby, helpless, and the child grows up and doesn't just say, stop it, or I'm going to judge you for what you've done. The child grows up and says, I will die in your place. I will take the plague upon myself. I will die so that one day all death and judgment and punishment will end. He is the one that John the Baptist says in the Gospel of John, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. And this is where I always have to go when I hear the questions of suffering, like why is there suffering? Or why did God do this? Or it seems like God is being cruel. I have to remember the whole story, step back and say, I have this question about this passage, but when I read the whole story, I see what God has done through Jesus, and my puzzlement, my wondering, my query, my wrestling turns into wonder when I realize this God who brought judgment on Pharaoh upon his own son brings not just judgment and justice, but also brings love and grace for the world. It's always the place I have to go when I'm wrestling with the questions of violence and suffering. I need the whole story. That Jesus Christ has come to suffer and die. He is the King who has become the servant, willing to die for others. And I don't hear anyone else telling me that good news. I don't hear Buddha dying for others. I don't hear about Muhammad dying for others. And I think, my theory is, the world knows this. The world knows the best story and the most beautiful story is someone who gives their life for someone else. And although the world keeps telling me that story, it's like the world can't believe that story really happened. So this past week, I'm not sure if I should have done this. I feel a little bit kind of weird telling you this, but I went and saw the most recent Terminator movie. I feel weird telling you that because I'm not sure if I would tell you to go watch it. But it happened again. I should have seen it coming. I should have known this is the way every story goes. So they're showing me again on the screen when all seems lost and it looks like the robots are going to win. Spoiler, sorry, I should have said that before. And the mission is going to be lost and the person they're trying to save for the future is going to be killed. At the very last moment, what happens? Someone said something, I couldn't quite hear it. But for me, the hero of the movie says, take my life. And when you do, you'll be able to defeat this enemy of ours. And I saw it again. I'm not saying the Terminator movie is the good news for the world. It's just a movie. But I saw, whoever directed that movie or told that story, it is the message, but in Jesus Christ, it is the real message. It is the real story. It really happened. The firstborn son offered his life for the sake of the world. He was the king who did not say, I'm going to judge you, I'm going to kill you. No, no, I'm the king, I've come to be judged and killed by you. And that's why we follow this Jesus. This is why we sing about and for this Jesus, because he has done what no one else could have done. He has done what all of us long for, that someone would die for us to free us from all the things that enslave us. And as the firstborn son, this king calls us in smaller ways, little ways, which I know for us seem like really big ways, but in little ways to do this for one another. To somehow, in a little way, sacrifice for one another that others may have life. And so this morning, as I think about the big story, not just Exodus and the 10th wonder, but the whole story, including Jesus, then I want to ask, is anyone worthy? Is anyone worthy of all our praise, all our songs, all our hallelujahs? Anyone here this morning worthy? There is no church leader who will do for you what Jesus has done. There is no religious leader who will do for you what Jesus has done. There is no story like the story of Jesus. Keep looking. If you find it, tell me. A real story. And when we hear that story, we do say, is he worthy? Is this one worthy of all the praise of creation? And we say, he is.